Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Good evening to you and welcome to Charlton Live. This is the Big Match Preview coming to you live from the Valley. My name is Louis Mendes and joining me here in the studio at the Valley is Mr. Tom Wallin. How are you doing, Tom?
Yeah, good. It's been a little while.
Had a good international breaky-wakey.
No, so boring.
Yeah, even the England-Spain game.
Oh, I missed that. I was in the cinema. Forgot it was even happening.
There you go. Excellent. The Nations League has not gripped this studio, unfortunately. Nathan Muller, did it grip you?
What's that?
The Nations League.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. To be fair, I only watched. I watched the first half and then turned it off for the second. So I saw the good bits.
Yeah. Well, what was it about the first half performance? Oh, I've had enough of this.
Oh, I knew.
I knew
we'd never let it keep going. But it was alright.
Excellent. But, well, glad to have you both back on tonight's Charlton Live. It has been a busy couple of weeks while we've been away. The Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust finally had their sit down meeting with the EFL, Sean Harvey, the CEO of the English Football League. So we're going to hear from Steve Clark. He's the vice chair of the Supporters Trust to find out exactly what happened in that meeting. They discussed obviously the state of the club, the situation with Roland Duchatelet, Duchatelet's personal meeting with the EFL. We're going to hear all about that from Steve Clark momentarily. Later on, of course, while there was an international break, at the same time we did play on the Tuesday and it did so happen to be the greatest game in Charlton history. We're going to look back at the 8-0 win in the Chequered Trade Trophy against Stevenage. We're going to hear the highlights, the excellent highlights from Nathan there. We're also going to hear from the hat-trick hero, Toby Stevenson, on his debut, banging a hat-trick. It don't get much better than that, so we're going to hear from him as well. Of course, we're going to then look ahead to Saturday's home game with Barnsley, a difficult test as the Tykes come down to the Valley this weekend, so we're going to hear from Leon Wobshaw from the Yorkshire Post, who's going to let us know how the Tykes have been getting on. And then, of course, we're going to hear from the Charlton boss, Lee Bowyer, as well. So plenty to get your teeth stuck into this evening on Charlton Live on the Big Match Preview. First things first, and so as we know, there's been all sorts of chaos at the club over the last few years, and the EFL have finally decided to see if they can help out in any way. They had a sit-down meeting with Roland Duchatelet in Brussels last week, and also this week, yesterday in fact, on Wednesday, they spoke to the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust. Now, Steve Clark is the Vice Chair of the Supporters Trust. He was one of the people present in that meeting, and I asked him how he thought the meeting went and what actually was said during it.
I mean, the first thing to mention probably is that the fact there was a meeting at all is progress, because about 6 months ago, I don't think the EFL were meeting any fans, and we probably owe a debt to Blackpool who've opened the way up for us. But we were pleased to be able to have a meeting, and we'd arranged it with John Nagel, who is their head of policy, and also Mark Rowan, their communications man. But we were a little bit surprised that Sean Harvey, the CEO, also joined us. We've been a bit critical of Sean in the past and some of the things he's done, but I have to say he was fully engaged with his input, I thought it was productive.
And what sort of concerns were you raising with them then?
Okay, well, we had sort of four topics we wanted to raise. Probably the two most important were what came out of the meeting that Sean Harvey had with Roland, and secondly, obviously very closely linked, were specific questions we had about the takeover and the status of that, because there have been so many stories around rumours and talk of various potential purchasers. We were very keen, obviously, to try to get them to give us as much as possible. And actually, I think they gave us a bit more than we expected, in the sense they did actually mention the Australians as the only organisation that have submitted an application under the owners and directors test, which is their sort of effectively their approval.
So what did they have to say in particular about their meeting with Roland?
The first thing and Sean Harvey was very keen to emphasise that at his own suggestion, he went out to meet Roland in Brussels, I think he wanted to be clear that he wasn't being summoned by Roland. I think it was a, you know, he got out of it what I think he probably expected. I don't think we heard anything new, or he heard anything new from Roland, bearing in mind there'd been an announcement probably from about 3 or 4 weeks ago about the various concerns that Roland had about the way the press were treating him and about protesting fans and all that stuff. So I don't think there was anything new came out. What the EFL are doing, which I guess sort of, you know, probably does make sense as long as they do it properly, is they're doing a sort of review. I mean, the word investigation was used a couple of times, but they were being a bit careful about that. But I think they're looking at the situation at Charlton. There's a definite difference between where potentially any club could be breaching their rules, in which case they then have clear sanction they can take against the club. And then on the other side of things, which is probably where we fall, where the behaviour of the owner is completely unacceptable, but measuring it against their criteria, it's quite difficult to find things that he's actually done that breaches the rules. And I'm encouraged that the EFL at least are now recognising that sort of that second category. So they do appreciate that, you know, that an owner's behaviour isn't necessarily... I mean, if an owner was fraudulent, then that would be something they could deal with. But an owner just doing stupid things is something they don't currently have a sort of category for. So, but I sense they're now looking into it. They've spoken to Roland. The big thing to come out of it following that is that they've got his agreement, and as the owner, I guess they needed it, to be able to interview members of staff at the club. And this obviously is especially relevant to the concerns about bonuses that have not been paid, which the staff are obviously expecting to receive.
Is that one of the things that the Trust raised then about the bonuses? And do you think that there's something now that the EFL will be able to do to try and help the staff in terms of getting those bonuses if after interviewing them they feel that they will be entitled to them?
Well, I would imagine, yes. I mean, I think there's a few steps to that. Certainly, what we wanted to do was two things. Make sure that the subject of the bonuses was something that the EFL covered, but also that they did, and to be honest, Sean Harvey got slightly sort of concerned or slightly upset that I was even suggesting otherwise, but that they will talk to a proper spectrum of staff. They're not just, I mean, we know that one or two people at the club are very pro Roland, and if all the EFL did and was go and talk to them, then clearly they're not going to get any information beyond what they've currently got. They need to ideally talk to every member of staff. I suspect that's probably too onerous under the circumstances, but certainly to speak to a selection of them. If having done so, it then becomes apparent that these bonuses, you know, should be paid, then I would imagine I can't confirm it, but I'd imagine the EFL would then be in a position to tell Roland he should do so. We will obviously, because payment to staff is one of the things that the EFL failure to pay your staff is one of the things that the EFL are able to deal with under their new rules. And we will, so as the Trust, the follow-up to the EFL will obviously be finding out what was said about that, but checking with them what they've exactly what they found and an understanding of it, because the club are saying, as I understand it, that these bonuses were discretionary or however you want to describe it, but don't need to be paid. And obviously the individuals who were sitting there thinking they were going to get their bonuses are feeling that they should have been paid and want to know why they haven't got them. So hopefully the EFL will be able to throw light on that.
Mm. Now, back, of course, on the subject of the takeover, and you mentioned that it was brought up and the Australians were mentioned. There was some comments from Sean Harvey in the Evening Standard this afternoon saying that Du Châtelet had said, similar to what he had put in a statement a couple of weeks ago, that he felt the miscommunications and the protests were not assisting the sale of the club. And then Sean Harvey went on to mention, as you say, about the paperwork issue with the Australians. I mean, first of all, what is the Trust's reaction to the fact that Du Châtelet feels that the sale of the club is being harmed by the miscommunications, as he puts it, and the protests of the supporters? Did the Trust feel that could well be the case or not?
I mean, I think that's nonsense. I think our view is that what we're doing is demonstrating a passion for the club, which if someone comes in and behaves even half reasonably, we'll get fully behind them, and that passion can be transferred not only getting pums on seats again, but also a number of people working, you know, giving their own time, as we've all done over the years, to help the club develop and to help the club, you know, get the crowds back to where we want. And obviously, alongside that, hopefully, means that things on the pitch get better as well. So, I mean, we had this debate. I felt that Sean Harvey was probably, you know, could see the argument, shall we say, that the protests might be causing a concern for a potential owner. I suppose there is an argument for that, but my view is if the owner is somebody who understands football, they will understand the difference between what was happening and has been happening at Charlton and is continuing under while Rowland's still there, that situation, and what would happen under a proper owner who would look after the club properly, you know, and try to develop a relationship with the fans. And so if you've got somebody coming in who didn't have any feel for English football or didn't have, you know, any real concept of it, then in many ways they're probably not somebody we want anyway. But clearly, you know, we are keen to get a new owner, and there aren't too many queuing up, so we can't be too choosy. But I would hope that any new owner would look at what's happening, recognise that these are passionate fans who have always had an affinity with the club, you know, going right back to the 80s, probably before that as well, but had this sort of stronger feeling with the club than a lot of other clubs might do because of all the stuff with going back to the Valley, etc. And therefore, you know, when things are going well, they'll be right there helping out, but when things are going badly, the fans are going to be, you know, advocate for us about it.
And could you just sort of confirm what Sean Harvey said about the Australians then? So again, obviously, I believe it's something to do with the paperwork issue. So did he add any more, like, shine any more light on that situation?
No, he wasn't in a position to say exactly what the paperwork is. I mean, I did make a statement about, you know, the fact that they can't get the money together, and you know, that is my personal opinion. I must say that very clearly. That is my personal interpretation of what's happening. I think what, I mean, there are a couple of key things in here. Firstly, the Australians are the only organisation to present. They presented a sale and purchase agreement, which is an agreement between both the club and themselves to make the purchase go ahead. So that is, in a sense, good news. They then present what's required under the owners and directors test. And that is where I think it probably happens every time the EFL get one. There are bound to be questions like any submission, you know, a detailed submission you make. There are going to be things they come back and they want clarification or they've got some questions. They've done that. They've not heard any response from the Australians. We highlighted that this seems to be taking a very long time. It was interesting that Sean said, actually, well, it is quite a long time, but don't think you're, you know, that's unusual. And he said they've had one case with a takeover going on considerably longer. I think we're encouraged by the fact that the EFL are still considering it to be live, so the case is still open. They're still hoping to receive the responses, though obviously as time goes on, you do get a bit more sceptical. And the other key point, which I think is important, is that Rowland has stated to Sean when they met that he would honour the deal that's been done with the Australians, and the key part of that is obviously is the price. Now, to be honest, my knowledge of this is not detailed enough to be sure. I'm assuming that the sale and purchase agreement is binding. If at some stage later the deal is to be done, there's still a sign-off that takes place, and therefore, I guess there's still an opportunity for either side to change their mind on price. So the fact that he's committed to that price, I think, is encouraging. I mean, again, personal view, you know, if he gets away with that price, he's done very well. I think the club is probably overpriced, and that is probably putting off other potential buyers. But, you know, if the Australians are able to raise the money and able to answer the EFL's, the EFL's questions, then, you know, happy days. It sounds like there's a deal to be done.
Excellent. So just finally then, I mean, do you feel that there's something positive has come out of the meeting? And do you think there's progress? Do you think there's a next step that will happen?
Yeah, well, firstly, the fact that there was a meeting is progress, so we mustn't lose sight of that. I balance that by saying this is only any good if when the EFL do their investigation, review, whatever it is, they actually go into it in full detail. They look at all sides and they come out and identify the real areas of concern, because I don't think there's any doubt that there are areas of concern with the way that Roland's been running the club. I think any normal, you know, common sense person would recognise that. Roland is one of their owners, so they are slightly going against one of their owners if they do that. But that's really the test. Is if all they're going to do is say, no, everything's fine, don't worry, then we've not really achieved anything. We'll certainly be back to them pretty sharpish with some strong counter views, but there's not much more we can do beyond that. I'm hopeful we have moved beyond that, and I think this is progress. It's yet to be proved whether, you know, the real nitty-gritty hasn't come to yet, but I do think this is progress, and this is the first stage of some sort of, you know, regular communication with them, and probably be extending beyond Roland's time as well. I'd like to think the EFL are now in a position where they're actually looking at the fans as stakeholders and trying to, you know, reflect their views as well.
So there we go, that was Steve Clark, the Vice Chair of the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust. He was present at yesterday's meeting between the EFL and the Supporters Trust, discussing the issues here at Charlton. They also met with Ronan du Châtelet last week. Now, one of the issues that still is yet to be resolved is the fact that, I mean, EFL have had this meeting with Roland, and other than by telling what they got from Roland to the Trust, do you feel like the EFL could probably come out and make a statement about what they said to Roland?
Yeah, I saw Rich say that it doesn't sound like that's going to happen, but I think they should. If they're going to speak to the Trust, if they're going to have this meeting, to me it doesn't serve much of a purpose if they then don't tell us what that meeting covered. Now, there might be some stuff that's, confidential that they don't want to give us, but they should give us at least an idea of what's going on, because as he said there in that interview, you know, in terms of how an owner runs his or her club, there's not a lot that they can do, and I kind of understand that, but at the same time they've called this meeting for a reason. It's because they want to understand things more, and as fans so do we. So for my money, if he's going to have that interview with them, then we should at least understand a little bit, just key topics, you know, like when they do the AGMs and stuff here, they just give you like bullet points or what was covered. I think something like that should have come out, but as I say, it sounds like it's not going to happen.
I mean, Nathan, I mean, Steve was obviously pleased that the EFL have sat down with the Trust, and he does see that as progress now. So it is, you know, it's some will say it's 4 years too late, and it's similar at Blackpool when they finally spoke to Blackpool, it was quite late, but it's finally happened. I mean, do you see this as a step forward?
I think so. For me, it is a step forward. It's not obviously resolved, and nothing's really changed much. But in terms, you know, we were in terms of the, you know, the protests outside DFL headquarters and stuff like that. That was probably in the pipeline of them going and meeting him. But at least we can sort of acknowledge that Sean Harvey has gone and met Roland, and whether or not he can say certain things or not, like Tom said. But I think it's a step in the right direction for sure. But I mean, It's difficult, because like Tom said, there's only so much they can say, because if Roland's asked them, I don't really want you to say anything, I'd imagine they'd have to adhere to his disclosure, but it doesn't help us. But the good thing for me is, you know, as it was said in the interview, that the price seems to be agreed, it's just the paperwork from the other side, which that's what the rumour has been, is that obviously whether it's funds or something's missing. So if he's willing to, you know, honour that deal, it's that, you know, the ball for me, the ball's in the Australians consortium's court, isn't it? So,
well, yeah, I mean, obviously there's still a lot that we don't really know about the Australian consortium, and if he's saying he's willing to honour whatever price was agreed before, but if for the Australians, I mean, if the Australians have agreed that price, then obviously that Roland will be expecting that price. But if they've tried to, I mean, no one really knows. People saying, oh, maybe they've had investors pull out because they didn't realise it's going to be that expensive, or because they don't think they'll get a return on their investment, or because there's some other reason. No one really knows. But Roland's saying that's only one side of the story. So you never really know why that thing hasn't gone through. I mean, it's quite clear that the Australians aren't ready to proceed at this point, because they've had plenty of time to do so and they haven't been able to yet.
Yeah, I think they've got to take some portion of the blame in terms of the takeover not going through. It sounds like, I think I read somewhere that it's a document around proving where the funds are coming from and who's supplying them and who's making up the consortium. And as Steve said in that interview there, it's pretty clear to us that they're just not sure where that money's coming from now. And we've talked earlier about rumours about certain investors pulling out and having to pull out. So that seems to be the issue. But I mean, that's just a very small part of everything that's gone on. Roland takes 90% of the blame, if not more, because he's the owner of the club, and whether there's a takeover happening or not, he could be doing better to run this club in a better way. And that's been the main problem, and that's the problem that the EFL need to address. If the takeover happens, then obviously that's a huge bonus, but whilst we've got Roland, that doesn't mean we should be happy with him running things the way he is at the moment.
Yeah, Roland, so there was these comments in the Evening Standard that were said to have come sort of possibly secondhand from Sean Harvey, talking about that Roland had told Harvey, and we knew this anyway because he put it in his statement on the club on the club website a couple of weeks ago, that he felt the miscommunications and protests were not assisting the sale of the club. I mean, we've probably covered this already, but at other times we had Liven, Roland's man at Charlton at the moment, telling us that he's had five interested parties recently. So if the protests are harming the sale of the club, then why are five interested parties trying to sell the club anyway, trying to buy the club?
Yeah, exactly, and that's the confusing thing. And going back into in terms of if, you know, apparently if the sale is the price has been agreed and whatnot, it begs the question as to why. If the price or the value, the way he's valued it and they've agreed it, of all these sort of cuts and so on and so forth, why are these happening if they've already agreed a price? Because it wouldn't, any cuts he makes now won't affect the price going forward, will it?
Mm.
And that's the thing that sort of makes me confused. But as you say, if there's like apparently these five other consortiums or five other people are interested, then I can't really see it affecting. Obviously, it doesn't affect, it's not putting any potential suitors off if there are five, but. Yeah, it's interesting, but I mean, it's still very grey, isn't it? We're still sort of second guessing as to.
I mean, yeah, because again, Roland talking about agreeing the price. I mean, Simon O'Hara saying, "Are really Australians? How serious are they? I know we want Roland to go, but the Aussies and their paperwork. Really, how long? I mean, so the assumption based on what Roland's saying. And don't forget, there was this joint statement that said a price had been agreed. Now, for whatever reason, that price is now the problem. Then why has it been agreed in the first place? I mean, it could be the fact that there's that price that the Australians supposedly have agreed to. I mean, that's what the statement said. If that's too high, then, I mean, if that was a reasonable price, you'd assume that other people would have agreed to it as well. So there's so much confusion over the price. If that has been a problem, then why was it agreed in the first place if that was the case? We knew there was a story in the South London Press from Richard Corley a couple of months ago now, about the fella Keith Harris at Everton, who was supposedly trying to scramble around trying to find other people to invest in this thing. So if they'd agreed a price but they didn't have the investors at the time, I mean, it's such a complicated situation. Obviously the NDAs and all that will make it more complicated as well, and it is a real difficult mess for Charlton fans to get their head around.
Yeah, and I think as fans, and having had Roland for as long as we have, I don't think we expected it to be any easier than this. As I said earlier, I think he takes a portion of the blame. His asking price for a start is absolute madness. But we're an attractive club to run. You know, we're London, we've got a good youth set up, we've got a lovely stadium, we're hopefully starting to turn and get back on the up. So you'd think there would be lots of investment there. And that's why, if the Australians are the front runners, I'm surprised that they haven't been able to stump up the business. And perhaps they are too, because they, as you said, if they wouldn't, they wouldn't have agreed that price if, okay, maybe they didn't have the money, but they must have had people who'd declared an interest for them to even make that offer in the first place. But when Roland or Louvren came out before and said that there was like four or five parties, so there might or might not be people around. And as I say, you would think that it's a club that people would want to invest in. So I don't know if it's the asking price. I don't know if it is just that there aren't people who actually want to buy it at the moment. I'm not sure what it is, but I think we all know that we need him out. But as I said before, whilst he's here, we need to at least hold him accountable for the way he's running the club. And I don't think the EFL can necessarily do a huge amount, but at least they've taken the step of talking to him, and that's some slight progress, I guess.
Pete Howard says, an interesting interview there with Steve Clark. He said, a sale on the horizon there, maybe, but it worries me that there will be many investors involved in this deal looking to take out dividends from the club, thus meaning our future transfer policy will be secondary. I mean, it's not unheard of for clubs to be owned by large consortiums. I mean, if you look at Barnsley, our opponents on Saturday. They were taken over towards the end of last year by a consortium led by, I think, a Chinese fella. But, you know, with plenty of money men behind them and groups. And it's not unusual. So it doesn't necessarily mean they'll all be looking for a profit straight away from transfer business. They might be looking for a profit by getting to the Premier League, which is where the real money is. So it's hard to say because, I mean, it might, at the end of this, I wouldn't be shocked to find out it was completely a moot point with the Australians, because at this rate, they're never coming. But if they do come in, we might find out more about what it's all about. Right, Martin said, sorry, this is a bloody mess. All well and good being happy that the EFL has spoken to the Trust and to Roland, but we're still totally clueless on anything to do with this takeover. What is concerning for me is the fact there isn't any other parties interested, judging by Steve's comments, which would suggest we must be seen as a bit of a poison chalice with the fans, protests, etc. I mean, again, if there is absolutely no reason why people wouldn't buy this club if it was a price affordable, because anyone could see that the protests are aimed at Roland. They're not aimed at Charlton Athletic Football Club. If someone else with, I mean, Steve even mentioned that in his thing, and Levan de Turk said it himself, apparently there was five different groups. There's no way this club will be seen as a poison chalice because of the protests, because there's, everyone knows that the second Roland's gone, then the problem is gone, and you start to run the club sensibly. No one will come in here thinking I'm planning on running the club like an idiot, and then the fans will annoy me. People will be thinking about buying the club, thinking I will be the one that will make these fans happy. The only thing for me that would put them off would surely be the price and not the protests.
Oh, exactly. I think if we assume that these five other consortiums is true, but there's only one that's, you know, who have agreed a price, then to me that says, well, the other four or five or whatever it is, they looked at the price and laughed at it and said, no, you're right, mate. If someone else is willing to pay that price, whatever that valuation is, then that's down to them. But we're not gonna pay that. And the difficulty is when you have more people, like Pete said, in terms of the amount of people, in terms of consortium, it lowers their risk. But then it then becomes difficult, because then you've got so many, it's quite convoluted, because you've got so many people having their say as a stakeholder, and that's when it gets quite tricky. So, and that could be one of the reasons for the hold-up, because you've got to try and find a common ground between 6, 7, 8, 25 investors. So,
right, come on, let's talk about something more interesting and a little bit less complicated. What's your thoughts on Brexit, lads? let's get back onto the football. I think we're going to pick up this chat again on Sunday evening show, when we'll have more time to discuss the interview there with Steve Clark, and to hear what the listeners have made of the whole situation at the moment, that of course is still ongoing here at the Valley. Now, it's been the international break, but last week, it was the greatest game of all time, statistically. Charlton travelled to Stevenage in the Checker Trade Trophy, one of my favourite competitions. I've always said it's a real it's important one. And they handed out the gubbing of a lifetime, Charlton's biggest ever victory, an 8-0 win at Stevenage, hat-trick from Toby Stevenson on his debut. It was one of those games that you went into with absolute zero expectations, and you come away saying that was genuinely one of my favourite nights following the club, because it was so funny. Let's have a listen to the highlights of that game. Nathan, your first ever lead commentating game. And it couldn't have gone much better, really, could it?
No, exactly. But, I mean, if there's any aspiring commentators out there, do not use this in the slightest, because it's probably... at the beginning, you sort of tried hard, and then as it started getting quite a bit silly, we thought, do you know what? This is just banter, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just banter. Let's hear how Nathan described that one.
That looked a bit of...
Oh,
Marshall.
One. Oh.
Oh, hang on. Oh, here we go.
Yes!
Wow. Well, that was out of nowhere. Ball came back to Mark Marshall, and he sort of shinned it with his left foot, and it was going way wide, and it's come off, ricocheted off a couple of legs of Stevenage, and it's fell to Darren Prattley, and Prattley's just tucked it away. Picks out Jamie Ward. Great ball.
Lovely ball.
An eagle for Takele through... Lays it back to Toby Stevenson.
Yes!
And Toby Stevenson, on his debut, the youngster has scored to make it Stevenage 0, Charlton 2. A great bit of play. He decides to beat his man, to step over, crosses the ball again. Good header from...
Great header.
Oh, yeah! It is Nicky Adjose. What a goal.
Mark Marshall got his chalk on the boots again, crossed it in. Igor Vetticelli headed it on, and Nicky Adjozie was there to tap home, and Charlton are winning 3-0.
We're in paradise. Who said the Chequered Trade Trophy was rubbish?
Yeah, well. That's inside. Nicky Lapsley plays a run. Great ball, and he plays it into Igor Vetticelli. Oh. And it's,
yeah,
it's a goal for Igor, and it's number 4. George Lapsley's picked the pockets of McComa here. And does he have a go?
Ooh.
Oh, he does! Lapsley.
That was Lapsley straight through.
Base.
I thought Eagle Laps- okay, might
I think
have got
Lapsley
a touch on
though.
That, but I think
really?
That was Lapsley's all the way through.
Well, base.
Maybe gone a little bit too far there.
Stobie Stevenson on his right foot. What a goal!
What a goal!
What a goal by Stevenson on his right foot.
Oh, and what a game for this young man. Goal. Toby Stevenson has been absolutely incredible from kick-off in the first half all the way through to now.
Nicky Adjozie again here. He's given a penalty.
Give it to
Toby.
Give it to Toby.
He's got to give it to Toby. Give it to Toby. Go on. He's got her. Tobes. All right, give it to Tobe. Prattley.
Give it
to Toby.
Toby.
Tell him.
Give it to Toby.
Give it to Toby.
Even Jacko's saying to give it to Toby.
He's coming up for it.
Come on.
Come on, Toby.
Come on, son.
This could be unreal.
Davidson, Toby Stevenson on for his hat-trick here.
His first date.
7-0 to Charlton. We can't control ourselves here in the
If he misses it, it's all your fault, you lot. Toby Stevenson will make it 7 for his hat-trick on his first appearance for Charlton. And he does! He's got that hat-trick! Yeah. He's going home with the ball. He's first ever game. Anyway, it's gone through to Nicky Adjozie. It's fell into Nicky Adjozie. Is he going to take it on his own, or is he going to square it?
Oh,
he's gone the wrong way, but he's got to the byline, cuts it back to Georgie Lapsley.
Yes.
He's 8, and he's great.
It's great.
And it's Georgie Lapsley. Oh, mate. Oh, unbelievable. If we were there. So you get
Athletic's biggest ever victory.
Georgie Lapsley has got 2. And
this is our record win now, isn't it?
Yeah. Record ever win.
And this could be the final kick, and it is. And Charlton win a fixture 8-0.
One of my favourite games of all time. A record that stood since 1953 when we beat Middlesbrough 8-1 here at the Valley. Charlton win by 8-0, their biggest ever victory. And as Lewis said in the commentary there, who said that the Chequered Trade Trophy is rubbish?
I still do, to be honest. But that was fun, wasn't it? I was just grateful not to be there and listening on commentary instead, because I had no idea what was going on. It was so much fun. It was like you were just watching a pub game or something.
Maybe you enjoyed it. I mean, London Innit Geezer particularly enjoyed it when we were all shouting, give it to Toby, give it to Toby.
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, I don't think Terry was listening. I think if Terry and Greg and obviously Tom listened to it back, I think their ears would bleed, because it wasn't the most cutting edge reporting, to be fair. But I was in there, like, I couldn't actually believe it.
Oh, it was great.
But
it was great.
The amount of times we said Toby, I don't know, it sounded like right weirdo. But it was enjoyable. But before the game, I mean, it was going to be a 1-1 and, you know, some damp affair. But it was hilarious.
We missed quite a few chances at 0-0. It took us nearly half an hour to open the scoring. And I was thinking, it was going to be a frustrating evening.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, the only, thinking back to it, it was interesting how we lined up, because obviously Prattley was playing
centre back. I mean, Lee Bayer said today in press, I ain't got the clip, but he was saying that he might actually use that as an option going forward if we need to. I thought he looked quite good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think.
Stevenage.
Yeah, I mean, it was Steve, and they didn't really test us. Like, Toby wasn't tested, like Bo said, but we weren't really tested enough to know for sure. But it's not like, you know, he's 5'2", even though Solly can do a job there. But I thought he looked really composed on the ball. He's a presence, but whether or not, you know, I'd rather do that than,
you know, rush Christian back for sure. But overall, it was a fun day.
Yeah, it was certainly a fun day for Toby Stevenson, 18 years old. We signed him from Leyton Orient during the summer. Apparently, effectively, they don't really have an under-23 situation at Orient, according to the Charlton website. So we signed him, giving him his chance. He's actually more of a central defender. We play, but he can play left as well. So we played him at left wing back and got a hat trick, an amazing debut. And obviously, we wanted to catch up with a young man after his performance on his first ever game.
Great experience for me. Thank you for like the gaffer and that to put me in there, Jason, and that it's just for me. All them lot. Yeah, it's a really good experience.
In your wildest dreams, could you think you'd start off like that?
Nah, but playing wing back, like, just thought, why not get in the box, get a chance, if I take it. And obviously, a couple came, hit the bar as well, was unlucky. Nah, but it was a really good experience, yeah, definitely. Hopefully many more to come.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you get a taste for goal scoring, I guess, after this evening. Did you score many goals for the 23s? And...
Nah, I don't really score that much, to be fair. Nah, it's just... Yeah, a really good experience for me, definitely.
Obviously, people talk about the Chequer trade as an opportunity for youngsters to get their go. We saw Lapsley got his first goal in it last season as well. So, I mean, this competition is probably quite a good way for you to get your first team debut.
Definitely a good way to give the younger players a go, like try them out and that. Definitely, yeah.
And, I mean, what were your feelings when that ball fell to you, the first goal? It was a nice finish from close in.
Don't know, just... Oh, I couldn't even tell you what was going through my head when I scored. Yeah, definitely a great experience. So. Yeah.
The second one obviously it's out nicely for you, but you still had a hell of a lot to do. Is that one of the best goals you've ever scored?
Yeah, I'm left footed as well. it was a great goal. Yeah, definitely. One of my best.
And now obviously the third one, the penalty got given. I think Nicky Ajoze won it, and then I think Nicky Ajoze wanted to take it. But from where we were, we could see Darren Prattley was saying that you were going
to
take it.
Got to thank Nicky, obviously, for giving me the pen. I'd like to get my hat trick, obviously. Yeah. Definitely took him a lot to give me the ball and that, but yeah, no, thanks to him, otherwise wouldn't have this ball.
Yeah. And what was going through your mind when you were standing there 12 yards from goal with a spot kick?
Just score it, like nothing else. I knew I was going to hit it, just hit it in place and hopefully it went in, and it did.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there was a lot of senior pros out there that you played with this evening, so it was a good experience for you to get to rub your shoulders with the likes of them.
I think it helps you a lot when you're playing with experienced players, just like talking to you, like helping you positionally and like off the ball, everything. Just big help for like any player really.
I mean, now you've got a taste for first team action as well. I mean, it's Charlton a bit lopsided down, or a little bit short-handed down the left-hand side at the moment. I mean, do you think that tonight you might have given yourself, given Lee Bowyer something to think about for the first team?
Well, yeah, definitely. But just got to keep working hard and keep doing what I'm doing. Just keep performing well. Just try my best every time.
I mean, obviously, a lot of people always say that Charlton's a good club to come to as a youngster because you know you get your chance. I mean, is that one of the reasons you decided to join?
No, not even that. Like, it's just a great club. Like, obviously, it was my chance to come here, and I obviously wanted to do well here. Like, wanted to sign that. Everyone's such a great club. Like, all the people here, all the boys, everything, all the lovely lads. Like, it's a good club to be at. Definitely.
Yeah, and obviously, it's been a great evening for you personally, but for the club as well. I mean, this is our record win. It's a record that's stood since 1953, so you're also part of history.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Yeah. Don't know what to say to that, but... No, yeah, it's definitely a great experience to be in, like, that kind of game, like, scoring that many goals. I think defensively as well, we're all switched on. Like, we played really well. Like, everyone played superb, I thought.
Toby Stevenson, that was good, innit? That's right.
That was classic, absolute classic.
Crispy said he's a man of few words. I mean, he's an 18-year-old kid, you forget really when you speak to him. But fair play to him. Enjoyed his debut and his hat-trick. And I mean, I asked Bowes about it after the game as well. I mean, does he give him just a little something to think about if we're desperate on the left-hand side at the moment? I mean, that is literally his first ever game, so we don't really know, do we?
No, it's not. He's not going to challenge the first team. But what it does do, if we were to get another injury, which I obviously hope we don't, then maybe at least we've seen him play now, so we know what he's about. I don't know, maybe he would be on a bench occasionally again, but in terms of a starting place, I don't think that's the case. But yeah, that's no discredit to him at all. It's just we don't want to do it yet. He's very, very young. He obviously had a dream debut, but he's going to take a little while to get up to speed and get used to that level. But yeah, what a great experience for him.
Yeah, Pete tweeted in, just putting my two-year-old to bed, and Nathan says the word convoluted absolutely cracked up and woke her up. Makes being a Charlton fan in this mess worthwhile. Nathan saying convoluted.
Yeah. That is a word, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't doubt yourself, mate.
Oh, I don't know, especially when Pete tweets it.
Right, let's start looking ahead to Saturday's home game here at the Valley with Barnsley. Now,
tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's actually a tough game. I mean, obviously, we're coming off the back of an 8-0 victory, so you're thinking they'll be worried about us. But Barnsley have had a good couple of results themselves recently. They're sat third in the table. Their last away game was a 4-0 win at Peterborough. So obviously Peterborough and no mugs as well. So that's a spectacular result. So yeah, I wanted to find out a bit more about the Tykes, relegated from the Championship last season. So I spoke to Leon Wobshaw from the Yorkshire Post just to find out how the Tykes have reacted to that relegation last season.
In the previous couple of summers, there have been a hell of a lot of players coming in. It's been a bit of a, almost like a bit of a revolving door, you know, in tons of players arriving. But obviously there was disappointment with relegation. But since there was a sort of a quiet confidence that once they sort of addressed the management issue, that they could keep the players and have a strong season. And that's been the way it's turned out, really. Mm. And we initially were surprised that Barnsley went foreign again. They obviously brought Jose Moraes in late winter, replaced Paul Agyemang. It didn't really go particularly well. It was a bit of a left field selection, and I mean, ultimately Barnsley went down, and he paid the price. And I think a lot of people were expecting Barnsley to, you know, to go domestic this time, but you know, fair play, they didn't. They sort of want to identify a playing style, and obviously identify this high press game and pressing sort of thing that, you know, Huddersfield Town have been successful with. And they brought Daniel Stendel in, and, you know, not a lot of people knew too much about him, but he got to work at the start of July, and, you know, the players really, you can quickly tell, they're really infused about his training, bought into this style of playing. And I said, bought into that, and the fact that they actually kept, you know, nearly all of the players, you know, quite a few sort of proved themselves at League One level at different clubs. There's always been like a quiet sort of confidence that they could have a strong season. It's been quite smooth, really. I mean, usually at Barnsley, say in the summer, there's a lot of turnover of players, and it's really hectic. But, you know, they managed to. And the only one who's really gone is Tom Bradshaw, and he went for family reasons, where really his partner lives in London, and obviously he moved to Millwall. But everyone else has pretty much stayed, really, who was under contract, the likes of Kiefer Moore and Brad Potts. There was interest in those during the summer, but they managed to keep them, and it's gone pretty smoothly so far, really, you've got to say.
Yeah, because as you say, I mean, Daniel Stendel came in, he was a former Hanover manager, not much experience in England at all, really, so surprising to see how well they've started. You know, just even looking over the last couple of results, I mean, that 4-0 win at Peterborough a couple of weeks ago was a spectacular result, and a good battling win against Luton recently as well, so they seem to be in fine form at the moment.
Yeah, I think the show, you know, on the day when they're at the best, there's not too many who can live with them. On the opening day of the season, I mean, sometimes it's easy, you know, easy to get carried away. But they beat Oxford 4-0, and you know, they were absolutely outstanding. And straight away in the first game under Stendel, you could sort of see an identity and a style. You know, this high pressing, lots of energy, like transition football almost. And the players seem to have been a bit rejuvenated by it, really.
Mm.
And it's been pretty consistent so far. They've had probably one pretty bad display at Coventry where, you know, it was the only league defeat so far where they were pretty poor and Stendel pretty told the players. So obviously got high standards. And, you know, I think the encouraging thing is that they're scoring a lot of goals. They've got a very healthy, you know, goal difference, but they're not conceding too many either. And, you know, I think, you know, it does all go well. I mean, on Saturday they had about six players out for one reason or another. They had the captain, Adam Davies, was in international duty. A key midfielder in Kenny Dougal was with Australia. Top scorer Peter Moore was injured as well, but they managed to sort of cope with that, you know, adversity. They brought a couple of other people in, and they still played really well. And you know, everything, you know, is sort of a bit of a feel good factor there at the minute. And they certainly come to obviously be a tough game at Charlton, but they'll certainly go there with confidence.
Mm. I mean, what were the expectations at the start of this year? Because obviously after relegation last year, a lot of fans expect to bounce back up. They've had the upheaval with the takeover that happened towards the end of last year as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, without sort of shouting it from the rooftops, I think there was a quiet determination that, you know, bouncing straight back up, really. And like I said, the fact that they didn't sort of spend loads of money on new players, they were confident in the ability of the players they had, if they kept them, to sort of, you know, bounce back. And sort of shown that level of confidence, and, you know, it's proved that way so far. They've got players like, you know, Brad Potts has proven himself at this level before, and George Moncur, Kiefer Moore as well at Rotherham last year. They feel they've got enough in their armoury to have a really strong season. I mean, obviously, when you get to January, if they're in a good position, they might, you know, do look at one or two other bits of business, but I think the fact that they were quite confident with what they had in the summer, you know, suggests that they thought they would have quite a strong season, and it's mapped out pretty well so far.
Mm. I mean, how do you think that they'll approach the game on Saturday? Because sometimes, I guess, if you go away to a team the likes of Charlton, you might try and sort of just look a little bit defensive, try and keep it tight. But I mean, talking about that 4-0 win at Peterborough a couple of weeks ago, it sounds like they're not afraid to take the game to the other bigger clubs.
Yeah, they're sort of quite strong at, I mean, they're good at counter-attacking, and they can take the sort of game to other teams as well. I mean, the interesting one is that, you know, Kiefer Moore's going to be, he's going to be a big doubt, and I think he'll be pretty much, you know, he'll be struggling for the weekend. So they'll have Adam Davies back, the regular goalkeeper and captain. They've got Dougal back in midfield. There's one or two little selection, you know, issues there, I suppose. But I think they'll just be, you know, they'll be confident without being too overconfident. I mean, they've gone away to Rochdale and won 4-0. They won 2-0 at Bradford. They won 4-0 at Peterborough. They've also, I think, they've won 3-1 at Fleetwood as well. So they've shown they can sort of take the game to home teams, but they're also strong on the counter-attack with the way they play. So I think they'll be, you know, reasonably confident.
Yeah, and who would you put down as a danger man? And interesting what you say about Kiefer Moore, because I'd noted him because he'd already got 7 goals so far this season. So if he's out, I mean, who will be the men that Charlton fans want to be looking out for?
I mean, they are very strong in midfield, but I mean, I think you would struggle to get on paper if you look at what they've got in midfield. It's arguably one of the strongest in the division. George Moncur has been playing really well the last few weeks. He was excellent at Peterborough, and he was really good against Luton on Saturday. So he's certainly in form. Brad Potts as well on the right. He's a box to box midfielder with a lot of energy. He's scored 3 goals in the last 2 games, so he's playing really well. Alex Mowat as well, who was he came from Leeds United, where he'd shown some really good form in his early years. Just sort of dimmed a little bit, but he seems to be, after a couple of quiet seasons, he's sort of showing the form, you know, that he had in his early days at Leeds. I'd probably say, you know, Potts and Moncur are the form players at the minute, but Mowat's having a strong season. Cameron McGinn, who came in for Dougal last weekend, he had a really good game as well. So they're sort of blessed with options in midfield. You know, they've got suppliers and they've got goals there as well.
Thank you to Leon Wobshaw there from the Yorkshire Post, telling us what to expect from Barnsley. Decent team. We were just talking about that midfield there off air. So one to be reckoned with at this level, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anyone else watched that game against Luton. Like, the first half, they should have been outside. I mean, Moncur, he had a quiet second.
But they weren't then, so they're rubbish.
Nah. But yeah, like you say, like, and Leon said, in the division, it's going to be hard to get a better three than that. Moat, for me, is a championship player. Brad Potts come from Blackpool. So yeah, it's going to be a difficult game on Saturday for sure. But, you know, we've got our good players as well. But if we're wanting to try and be one of the best in the division, you've got to try and beat these teams.
Yeah, London Geezer says, looking forward to this one and getting back to winning ways. We have the talent and the manager. Hopefully we get that bit of luck that has deserted us recently. Pete Howard says, I feel the game will be a complex and convoluted state of affairs with us winning by 3-1. Now, of course, we want to hear how Charlton look ahead to the game. Lee Bowyer was asked about that on his press day earlier on today. First of all, asked what he makes of how Barnsley have done so far this season.
Yes, they've turned it around the last few weeks. I think they had a bit of a slow start, a bit hit and miss. But yeah, they're a good side. Went away to Peterborough, scored three against Luton last weekend. So I've watched them two games. They're good in possession, very good in possession. Their movement's very good, their rotation. But they have weaknesses like every team. So we have to be secure under the ball. And when we win it, we have to use it well. The difference is with them, I think, is they're ruthless in front of goal. So when they create a chance, they take it. And that's the difference. But the Championship side just come down. I think they only lost one or two of their squad from last season. They've kept their side. So you expect them to be up there. I've always said from the beginning they'd be up there. So it'll be a good test. I think this will be our biggest test so far this season.
Players on international duty for the past fortnight, have they returned unscathed?
Yep, they've all come back uninjured, which is good. Josh played 290 minutes, which is... I'd rather he didn't, but it is what it is. But the most important thing is that they've all come back unscathed, so, which is good.
With all the injury problems you've experienced, were you kind of heart in the mouth for you, wondering, well, I don't need any more, are they going to come back all right? Do you think about these things constantly?
Yeah, especially Christian, because he hadn't obviously played any minutes for us since he's come back from injury. And then he went away, so I was hoping that it would get some minutes into him, but that hasn't been the case. And he's come back and he's still fit, so that's good. Right? Because sometimes when they do that and they go away without getting any football into them, then they can break down again. So the positive thing is he's had a good 2 weeks of training. And so, yeah, he's back, but I would rather him got some minutes into him, because he could have played for us in that Checker trade game, you know. But we can't control that. But the most important thing is they're all back and looking good.
Has the 2 week break aided the recovery of long term injured players?
Well, you can say that Patrick and Pagey, that it's helped them. It's like 2 weeks gone by and they ain't missed a game, so that's a positive. And then we've got, who else has just come back? Somebody else has just come back and been able to get some training. Waldy's been able to play in that Checker trade game and have like 2 weeks of training with us. So, yeah, it's benefited us, I think, in the long run it would have done.
Lee Bo, yeah, they're looking forward to Saturday's home game with Barnsley. Good to hear that all the players who went off on international duty have come back unscathed. It'd be interesting to see how we line up though now with the left back situation, as we know is one that's been tickling us a little bit with Lewis Page out. Obviously last week we had Solly went over to the left hand side. Now it sounds like Bilic's ready to come back in. Would you put him straight back into the defence with Saar going on the left hand side? But Charlton Saar saying I'm not sure why Saar is the next choice at left back ahead of Solly. He's a slow centre back. Dick still kept Solly out. The team last season was excellent in the running. Solly is perfectly comfortable with his left foot and understands a fullback role much better than Saar. Really can't understand the thinking here. I mean, views on that? Should we be deploying Saar there? I mean, or would you prefer Solly playing on the wrong side?
I'd prefer to put Saar at left back and put Solly back at the right, and Bilic come straight back in myself. I know that they're gonna. As we talked about, their midfield is very, very strong. I think we need our best right back in his rightful place. Saar might not be the quickest player in the world, but I think he can equip himself well in that position. Bradford away last year is a prime example of him doing that job well. I think actually he's played quite well in all the games he's played in central defence as well. So although we've said he still occasionally makes us nervous, I'd like to see that and see Bilic come back in personally. Just keep the four at the back for now. Obviously, with Pierce still out, so that's what I'd like to see. But I don't know whether Bowyer would prefer to keep Dick Steele on the right and put Solly left, because again, as whoever it was just tweeted, then said Dick Steele has played well as well. So although we've got the injuries, it's not going to be our perfect back four. At least we still have got some options now.
I mean, Lanini, Giza, send the Barnsley. Giza reckons their midfield will boss it. Do me a favour. Ours is second to none. I mean, we're talking about the quality in their midfield. And don't forget, we have got the likes of Cullen in there. Joe Ariba, Ben Reeves has looked good when he's played recently. And we're going to go toe-to-toe with them.
Yeah, I think so. And I think whoever comes out on top in terms of the midfield will win the game.
100%.
For me, they are quite, you know, they're good at the back, but I think sometimes, no, in recent weeks we haven't been, but we know we can be a good defensive outfit. But I think whoever wins that midfield battle between the likes of Moncur and Potts and Cullen and Rebo, that's who will win, where the game will be won for me.
Now, obviously, you know, ignoring the Checker trade glory, I mean, we are actually on a run of two defeats in the league, the Scunthorpe game and the Coventry game here at the Valley a couple of weeks ago. So, I mean, in terms, I mean, this is probably the game you don't really want to be playing when you, or is it one? Is it this one where you can rise to the occasion?
Yeah, I think so. And when you look back at all the fixtures, I think we've won four of our last seven in the league, and you know, it's all, you take it from stats what you want, but those two defeats, you know, the Scunthorpe one was just a mad game, and the Coventry one, there is no way we should have lost that, like no way at all. That was our naivety that cost us that game. So you know, if they've had 2 weeks to work on that, which they have, a couple of players back in fit, there's no reason something like that should happen again. Obviously we're up against much stronger opposition, but again, we tend to perform well against those oppositions. Okay, we lost these two games, but you think of how we performed against Peterborough and Sunderland. I think, again, we were unlucky. So you can't be unlucky forever. I think, like London Innickgeezer said, our midfield is good. I don't think it's as good as Barnsley, but it is still strong. And we've seen them boss games recently, which is something we haven't seen a Charlton midfield do for a while. So I don't. Look, it's going to be a very tough game, but I don't think it's out of the question for us to get all 3 points.
It'll be interesting to see how Barnsley approach this one. When we spoke to Leon there, and we heard him, that they're not afraid to go and attack teams away from home, as we've seen with the Peterborough game. They've gone and scored a lot of goals, but he also said that they have got it within them to sit back and hit teams on the counter. Now, what we want is for them to try and come out, because we're much better when there's space to exploit. And when we've had teams sit behind, you know, we saw the Coventry game where we, you know, created some chances but not enough and didn't take enough. So we prefer a much more open game. You look at the amount of goals we did score at Scunthorpe. If we had tightened up at the back there and got, you know, 3 goals away from home, you know, we want a game that's much more open. But do you think Barnsley will know that, won't they?
Yeah, they will. But I mean, Barnsley also press high, and they did that very well against Luton. But on the flip side, the second half, Luton went a bit more direct and found the spaces and made a game of it. So, I mean, it's not, you know, Barnsley are a good team. They're not Man City. You know, we're still going to get chances. Yeah. We're still going to have some chances against them. And I just think, I think they'll show us a bit of respect. Of course we will, because we're not, you know, slouches. But we're going to get our chances. I just think, and like Tom said, we seem to play better against the bigger teams and not so much against the teams, you know, like the Coventries or even Plymouth. We did batter them, but we just got away with it. So I'm confident, but it's going to be a tricky game. It'll be like Bo said, it'll be our trickiest game.
I mean, if you look at form, like, I think Barnes have won 3 out of the last 4, including the 4-0 at Peterborough and the 3-2 win over Luton. But I mean, you can take form and make it mean whatever you want. So, for example, Charlton won their last game 8-0, and their last game against Barnsley, they won 6-0. So we're banging form going into Saturday's game. Right, it's going to be a special game at the Valley for one young lad in particular. I just want to highlight something nice that Tracy Leeburn did for a friend of mine. An old friend of mine texted me saying that he was at a charity auction recently where a young lad with Down syndrome won tickets to come to the game against Barnsley. Apparently this kid was made up, like really happy to be coming to the Valley. And so my mate texts me saying, do you know if there's anyone who could sort out like a signed photo or something? So I forwarded him on to Tracy and said, oh, Tracy, if you wouldn't mind doing something to make this day extra special. So she went out of her way not just to sort out a signed photo, but actually this young lad's going to be a mascot here at the Valley on Saturday. So just want to point out something really nice that the club have done there, and obviously in particular Tracy. Just very quickly, Nath, we've chosen our Jacko's jackpot. It's not going out to vote this week. What have we gone for?
I fear Charlton to win 1-0, 2-0 and 2-1, and that's it, I think it's so about 12 quid out of 250.
That would go towards the upbeats if we win. Let's have your predictions quickly, chaps. Tom,
2-2.
2-2, a bit of a Desmond.
We ain't won in our last 4 at home against Barnsley, so I'm going to go 1-1.
1-1, excellent stuff. Right, I won't predict because we've run out of time. This has been Charlton Life. Got myself off the hook there. In the time I've said this, I could have predicted this, but I haven't. Thank you for listening to this evening's Big Match Preview. Don't forget, we'll be back here on Sunday evening to look back at whatever happens against Barnsley here at the Valley. We'll have our exclusive post-match interview with Lee Bowyer as well, of course. Tom and Nathan, thanks for coming in.
See you Saturday.
I've been Louis Mendes. This has been the Big Match Preview. Thank you for listening and for joining in. We will see you back here on Sunday, hopefully celebrating 3 points for the Addicts.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.